from deep inside your radio.
It sounded a little watery, didn't it? Just my ears? No, I sound fine. I know, that's a mistake. I'm listening to my own show. Ladies and gentlemen, first of all, thanks to all the people, and I pop when I say people, the people who've shown up at the New York, Chicago, and Friday night, the Los Angeles shows of the Christmas sing-along that Judith Owen and I have been putting on this year, helping us raise a lot of money for the New Orleans Musicians Clinic and the New York Actors Fund for Sandy Relief. Yes, you could actually help Sandy Relief without having to listen to Billy Crystal. Amazing. Amazing. And word to the wise, in New Orleans, you folks know what the deal is. Tuesday and Wednesday night at the Contemporary Arts Center. We're doing it two more times this year, and we'll be looking for you. Now, ladies and gentlemen, what the frack? The relationship between, you know what fracking is, hydrofracturing of rock formations, shale formations, to unleash the natural gas bonanza within. The relationship between hydrofracking and seismic activity has been spotlighted at the American Geophysical Union meeting in San Francisco. Scientists presented the latest evidence tying the disposal of wastewater from shale gas fracking to increased earthquakes. Because we don't have enough earthquakes, don't you? I mean, why should the coasts have all the earthquakes? Some U.S. states, including Oklahoma, Texas, and Colorado, have experienced a significant rise in seismic activity over the last few years. So has Ohio, coinciding with a boom in fracking. It produces huge quantities of wastewater, because we can afford that, that is typically disposed of in deep wells. But the degree to which the disposal of wastewater from fracking operations has caused the unusual seismic activity is still up for debate among scientists. Most states don't consider earthquake risk when allowing gas drilling companies to dispose of large volumes of chemical-laden drilling water. Hydrofracking produces far more wastewater than conventional oil and gas drilling. Because water is not going to be scarce in our future, near-term future. Scientists believe that wastewater injection wells, which are often the cheapest, disposal option for drilling companies, are the main quake culprit. Today, 90% of fracking wastewater in the U.S. is disposed of in those injection wells. The cheapest way to dispose of it. Since 2010, Oklahoma residents have felt more than 250 earthquakes, many of them more than the 1 to 3 reported each year in previous decades. The largest ever in Oklahoma's history, a magnitude 5.7 last year, was likely caused by fluid injection, concluded of Oklahoma, Columbia University, and U.S. Geological Survey scientists in presenting their data at the conference. Other USGS scientists looked at a series of earthquakes since 2001 in Colorado and New Mexico. They also presented their results this week and concluded that these quakes were the result of wastewater injections. The scientists indicate that what's in our future, a lot more induced earthquakes as the gas boom expands. That's according to U.S. Geological Survey Earthquake Science Center researcher Art Magar. More induced earthquakes, ladies and gentlemen. It's just like induced pregnancies, I guess, except more shaken. An unidentified chemical used in fracking in the United States has triggered concern after it emerged it can cause kidney and liver damage. This from Bloomberg News. A subsidiary of Neighbors Industries pumped a mixture of chemicals identified as EXP-FO-17311 into half a dozen oil wells in rural Texas in July. One ingredient, a solvent in the blend of chemicals, can cause kidney and liver damage, according to information about the product that Michigan state regulators have on file. Problem is, a lot of these chemicals are never identified because the companies are allowed to say that they are trade secrets. As a matter of fact, some of the fears about fracking are fed by the relatively light-handed regulatory regime applied to shale gas fracking in the United States. Under federal law, fracking enjoys several important regulatory exemptions. This is that heavy hand of regulation. Several regulatory exemptions that are not applicable to most other heavy industries. The exemption of fracking wastes from the definition of hazardous wastes. It's expensive to comply with the Resource Conservation and Recovery Act, so frackers are exempt. Why is it expensive? Because the statute requires those treating, storing, or disposing of toxic wastes to meet strict, detailed technical and financial requirements, including the requirement that hazardous waste be disposed of only at specially permitted hazardous waste disposal facilities. Better to just do it the cheaper way, don't you think? The Clean Water Act regulates the disposal of waterborne fracking waste into lakes, streams, or sewage transport treatment facilities. However, that act does not regulate the disposal of fracking waste on land or their injection into the ground. Fracking wastes are also exempt from another fairly strict body of regulations, the so-called underground injection well requirements of the Safe Drinking Water Act. And fracking is also exempt from some information disclosure requirements contained in the Federal Emergency Planning and Community Right to Know Act. What does that remind you of, ladies and gentlemen? That's right. The nuclear industry is similarly exempt from certain laws and regulations. Nothing to be afraid of, nothing to be alarmed about. It's just you don't need to comply with these laws is all. What the frack? It's just a thing. A scientist who, this is another subject now, that, hence the pause and the, a scientist, psychologist, I believe, who has done research in the field, who was interviewed on the BBC this week on the subject of how do you prevent the next mass shooting. And his recommendations were, you pay almost no attention to the shooter, to stories about who is he, why is he, why did he. You do not do 24/7 coverage. You do not make it a big national and international deal, because in the warped minds of people who are tempted to do these sorts of things, these act as positive incentives. That's right. Nobody paid attention to him. Hello, welcome to the show. The Edge of America, from the home of the homeless, I'm Harry Shearer. Welcome you to this edition of the show. Wasn't that supposed to be the clean version? Yes, it was. And now, ladies and gentlemen, this is the end of the year. This is the time when we look back in rancor at the events that have occurred in the past 12 months. And this week, we will be looking at the two personalities, and I'm going using that word advisedly, who filled so many of the hours, so many of the inches of the news hole this year, i.e., Mitt Romney and Barack Obama. This is the year in rebuke.
Next, intimate tales of America's first underground former vice president. The action-packed diary of the man who used to be just a heartbeat away from history.
Dick Cheney, confidential, 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 confidential. It's been a busy little springtime when you stop to think about it. New pills, new stents, new shunts, new ways of tricking the old ticker into giving me a few thousand more ticks. Not because I have that much more left to accomplish. Just to tick off my enemies. And if you think Lynn's normal cooking was good, and it wasn't, you should taste the stuff she's whipping up to be heart healthy. It would make a food industry lobbyist yodel a rainbow. Meanwhile, spare a dad a proud moment or two. My non-lesbian daughter Liz is well on her way to being, well, to call her the poor man's Ann Coulter would be cruel. But to call her the blind man's Ann Coulter would be cruel, too. So forget about a dad's pride. Here at the secure, undisclosed Wyoming, the fish were biting and the elk were screaming bloody murder. No, dear diary, I haven't shot anybody in the face this hunting season. Yet. Someone who didn't know me better might think it was a time of mellowing contemplation for me. But they'd be wronger than a starlet at fat camp. Something was happening inside that grand old party of mine. An unstiffening of spine, a rollback of robustness, an enhanced lack of enhancement, you might call it. And though it might cost me 1,000 ticks on the old meter, I had to suit up one more time. Not in a suit. This was Wyoming. But I hosted a fundraiser for the party's presumptive presidential candidate, just so I could make sure he wasn't presuming too much. Thursday, 5:17 p.m.
Great spread you've got here, Mr. Vice President.
Yeah. It's 100% canola oil, but it tastes just like margarine.
I was referring to the real estate. Nice little parcel.
Well, I had to park the Halliburton payout somewhere. Uh-huh. Stocks were crap. I don't like art, so...
And it's a great crowd we've got here. Real cross-section. Everybody from billionaires to multimillionaires.
Yes, sir. It's the cream and the crop. Uh-huh. Hey, listen, pal, before they ring the dinner bell, mm-hmm. let me show you one of the standout features of this Mega Ranchito.
Oh. Hey, it's dark in here.
And deep. Welcome to my little meditation chamber.
Oh, I didn't know you meditate, Dick.
I don't. You do.
Oh, no, sir. We pray just like normal Christians do.
Listen, Smiley. All the good hair in the world isn't going to save you now. We've got some straight talk to be doing, and I'm going to be doing it. After which comes your little meditation.
Ha 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 ha, Dick. You're kind of playing into your negative stereotype here.
And you've got the lamest laugh this side of Woody Woodpecker. Where'd you learn to laugh like that?
Business school.
Okay, my friend. You see, we made a little rain here tonight.
$6 million worth. That's a nice little evening's work.
More than you expected, right, pal?
I have to say, we're pleasantly surprised.
Mm-hmm. That's because these are my people. They paid to meet you, and to support you, and to face you with some realities.
Well, sure, glad to answer any...
Okay, let's start off the questioning with Mr. Cheney.
Fine.
What's your vision for the world?
You mean aside from it becoming Mormon?
Yeah, aside from that.
Well, stability, freedom, new respect for America, all that good stuff.
Geez, a minute more of that, I was going to ask you to start laughing again.
No problem.
No, there is a problem.
I look like a Ming.
Cheap imitation. Mm. Listen, my friend, it's a bad old world out there. We either take robust steps to remake it in our desired image, or we start accommodating ourselves to the wishes of folks with strangely shaped eyes and odd names for God.
Not good.
No, sir. Now, there's a couple of countries in the Middle East. I won't insult you by calling them dominoes, but let's just say they're tenpins. Mm-hmm. Syria and Iran get toppled, and the United States effectively owns the lane for the next little while.
Well, Syria is a complicated mixture of ethnicities, but one thing I will not do is apologize for America.
That's nice. I bet you won't pee on the dinner dishes either.
I mean, no, I won't. Mm-hmm. But, Dick, I do have a great foreign policy team advising me, the great Brent Scowcroft.
Listen, my friend, if you want your wife to leave here tonight without fending off a horrifying attack from an angry moose, then I suggest you put all thoughts of taking advice from the so-called realist wing of our party right out of your mind.
Well, for goodness sake, what's wrong with a little realism for a change?
My friend, when you're in a secure, undisclosed underground bunker with only 4 hours of oxygen, and me the only person who knows the exit code, it's a little late for realism.
Earth to Dick Cheney, I'm a pretty fit individual. The minute you open that hatch, I could overpower you.
Relax, my friend. You've seen too many movies. I was just giving you a scenario. What you just showed me right there is what we want you to show the Syrians and the Iranians.
Well, of course, my team and I will give it the most serious consideration.
Look, pal, our Iraq project left a few loose strings dangling. Your vision for the world could be neatly described as Operation Loose Strings. And if you disagree, I'm sure some folks here tonight could make it stop raining awful propitiously.
Well, you know what? I am going to take you up on that meditation offer.
Good thing. We don't want to keep that very expensive bad food waiting. I wasn't born yesterday. I didn't just get off the Southwest flight from Fresno. It'll take more than one scary conversation in the presence of heavy-duty donors to turn laughing boy. Fortunately, I've got all year. And a partial diary for early July 2012. Sincerely yours, Dick Cheney. Confidential. Confidential. Confidential.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, news of the atom.
Clean, safe, too cheap to meet. Safe, safe, too cheap to meet. Cheap, safe, too safe to meet. Safe, safe, too safe to meet.
Addie, are you got your Christmas shopping? I'm sorry there, Addie. You turned my way and turned my microphone off.
Sorry.
Got your Christmas shopping done yet?
You're kidding.
I am kidding. Thorium, ladies and gentlemen. We talked about thorium on a recent edition of this, a couple of recent editions of this broadcast. It's been touted as an ideal fuel for a new generation of nuclear power plants because of the difficulty compared to uranium-based fuel or plutonium-based fuel of proliferation, among other things. In a piece in Nature magazine, however, this month, researchers suggest it may not be as benign as portrayed.
Nothing is.
That's right. It is. Nothing is. Thorium, which many regard as a potential wonder fuel, could be a greater proliferation threat than previously thought. Writing in Nature, nuclear energy specialists from four British universities suggest that although thorium has been promoted as a superior fuel, it should not be regarded as inherently proliferation resistant. It highlights ways in which small quantities of uranium-233,
that's my favorite uranium,
a material usable in nuclear weapons, could be produced covertly from thorium by chemically separating another isotope, protactinium-233, during its formation. You familiar with that, Addy?
Yeah, have a breakfast every day.
The chemical processes that are needed for protactinium separation could possibly be undertaken using standard lab equipment, potentially allowing it to happen in secret and beyond the oversight of the IAEA, the paper says. The authors note that from previous experiments to separate it, it's feasible that just 1.5 tons of thorium metal would be enough to produce 8 kilograms of U-233, the minimum amount required for a nuclear weapon. They add this could be done in less than a year. Thorium certainly has benefits. We think that the public debate regarding its proliferation resistance so far has been too one-sided.
What, there's such a thing as one-sided enough?
I guess so. That's Dr. Steve Ashley from the Department of Engineering at the University of Cambridge. So, another think on thorium.
You got a lisp?
No, not yet. Washington environmental regulators say a new 5,000-page plan for the Hanford nuclear reservation is very useful, but it lacks a definitive path forward for treating a large part of the radioactive sludge there.
I was just thinking about sludge. I love sludge.
The most radioactively contaminated waste at Hanford's is set to be bound up into more stable glass logs, but the government hasn't decided exactly what to do with everything else, the low-activity waste, in the new massive cleanup roadmap. That concerns the land waste treatment manager for the state of Washington's ecology department. She says after 10 years of work on the plan, the state wants the federal government to stop exploring options and commit to binding up the low-level waste in glass, too. The U.S. Department of Energy, though, is keeping several options open, such as binding up the waste in grout or in a system called steam reforming. No comment?
I like grout.
The Nuclear Regulatory Authority of Japan says a thorough review of its mistake-plagued projections for the spread of radiation in the case of possible meltdown like Fuk turned up errors in the data for every nuclear power plant in Japan. The NRA said there were significant changes in diagrams for how radiation could spread in the event of crises at two power plants compared with the previously released projections put out October 29th. According to the Japan Times, the three projections had to be revised either because the plant operator supplied erroneous weather information or because the data were incorrectly processed by the Japanese Nuclear Energy Safety Organization, which is tasked with creating the projections. The simulations show the distances at which doses could reach a crucial level a week after a severe crisis. At that dose level, recommendations are for evacuation. The regulatory body examined the data in detail to ensure there would be no more mistakes in the projections.
That's my goal. No more mistakes.
A second nuclear power plant in Japan sits atop a possibly active seismic fault, government-appointed experts said this week, days after the first facility was said to be at risk. A panel appointed by the Nuclear Regulation Authority says fractured strips of earth beneath the Higashidori's plant compound in northern Japan may be active faults, meaning it would likely have to be scrapped. Monday, geologists said it was probable that the Tsuruga nuclear plant in the center of the country was sitting on faults that showed signs of geologically recent movement. Active faults are those that, among other things, have moved within the past 120,000 to 130,000 years. The acting head of the regulation authority said some of the fractures under the Higashidori plant may have resulted from tectonic movement in the past 100,000 years, that is, more recently than the other regulation.
Thank goodness we don't have to keep these things safe for 100,000 years.
That's right. It is so right. The operator of TEPCO, which operated Fuk, has acknowledged that the company long neglected safety measures intended to avoid and manage severe accidents. It was obsessed, though, with fixing minor safety problems to improve operational records. A task force launched by TEPCO said that the company just didn't think disasters beyond their anticipation would occur.
Isn't that so human?
Yeah, it is, really. And failed to follow international standards and recommendations that could have mitigated the impact of the accident.
Well, that's human, too.
The utility could have done more to back up its power and cooling systems, was short on emergency equipment, such as fire engines, and had treated crisis management drills as a formality, the task force said. It also said TEPCO employees lacked crisis management skills, and the company lacked equipment needed in cases of crisis. It introduced plans to nurture a company-wide safety culture through various programs, including safety contests among employees. Yeah.
Yeah, right. The Nuclear Regulatory Commission in this country is considering amending the rules for proper disposal of low-level radioactive waste. It's updating its analyses of facilities that dispose of the waste and allowing for the development of criteria for waste acceptance. These will ensure that waste streams that are significantly different in terms of radiological characteristics, i.e. half-life, from those considered in the current regulations can be disposed of safely, blah, blah, blah. The proposed changes would include a 10,000-year compliance period for analysis of disposal facilities, as well as a long-term analysis for certain wastes that last longer than others. See, Addie? 10,000-year compliance period.
That's nothing.
You're not kidding. And the Swedish Radiation Safety Authority, you don't want me to pronounce the name of it in Swedish, has asked nuclear waste contractors at a nuclear plant in the country to review their security requirements after cracks were found in the pools where nuclear waste is temporarily stored on site.
Crack smacks.
Good point. Clean, safe, too cheap, too crack to meter. Our friend, the Adam. Have a happy holiday, Addie.
You too.
That's sweet. That was a sweet moment. That was a sweet emotional moment. Ladies and gentlemen, it was in the spring of this year that the president awarded medals of freedom to several prominent Americans. Among them, Bob Dylan. You've heard of him. Just a day earlier, the New York Times had run a story, front page story, about the targeted assassinations run by this administration. And prominent in the story was the fact made public to the New York Times that the names of the targets for targeted assassination were presented on so-called baseball cards with their known facts about them presented on those cards for personal selection, personal targeting for killing by the President of the United States. Either in that story or shortly thereafter, we learned that some of these targeted killings by drones are not targeted to individuals, but are so-called signature strikes, which can be assigned to areas where activity looks suspicious. For example, it is assumed that any males between 18 and 70, I think that was the number, are maybe a lower age, more military age, are presumed to be suspicious if they're in certain areas unless they can prove posthumously that they're innocent. So you have the president running the kill lists and giving a Medal of Freedom to Bob Dylan. It seemed an impressive moment in
2012, the year in rebuke. Oh, you listers of kill, you think you're so smart. You list with your head, you kill with your heart. It's all remote control, no blood on your hands. But they all know your name in those far distant lands. You've got baseball cards from which you can choose folks who will win from those who will lose. The men who are young, which you'd be if you could, are okay to snuff. They're probably up to no good. Your planes are all drones, no pilots at risk, nobody to question, nobody to frisk. It's all so precise, that's the way that it's played. And when you kill children,
mistakes that were made. Now you're drawing the bullseyes in a war without end. Detainees are forever, so you don't apprehend. Oh, you doubled down on a wrong-headed war. We thought we voted for less, but you gave us more. Oh, you listers of Kill, you think you're so smart. You list with your head, you kill with your heart. It's all remote control, no blood on your hands. But they all know our names in those far distant lands.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, the apologies of the week.
We're so sorry.
Not that many apologies this week, but, you know, quality is job fave. British Prime Minister David Cameron has apologized after a report found that the British government had actively furthered and facilitated the murder of Northern Ireland lawyer Patrick Finucane in 1989. The report also found the British government had given information that led to other attacks on Republicans and Catholics by Protestant terrorist groups. It is really shocking this happened in our country, Cameron said, before personally apologizing to Finucane's family. Yeah, nothing bad ever happened in Britain. Dateline Tallahassee, Florida, House Speaker Will Weatherford has apologized for the behavior of some lawmakers at a retreat last month when several Republican members who had been drinking became unruly at a Disney World hotel. It's the unruliest place on earth. Weatherford said he's still trying to learn what happened, but was concerned enough about reports of rowdiness that he apologized to members the next day and warned he could not condone, quote, unruly behavior. Dateline New York, the president of Yeshiva University has apologized for alleged instances of sexual misconduct and harassment by two former teachers at the university's high school. President Richard Joel issued a statement this week following the publication of an article in the Forward newspaper.
Sorry.
We're just looking forward, which investigated claims, most of them more than two decades old. They're looking backwards. That two rabbis at the university's high school for boys were known for acts of inappropriate sexual contact with students. The activities of the two rabbis were widely known in the university community and were reported to school administrators. Neither was disciplined by the university. The actions described represent heinous and inexcusable acts that are antithetical both to Torah values and to everything that Yeshiva University stands for. The president said they have no place here. The thought that such behavior could have occurred at our boys' high school or anywhere at this institution at any time in the past is more than sufficient reason to express on behalf of the university my deepest, most profound apology. Unquote. Rabbi Norman Lamb, the university president until 2003 and its current chancellor, admitted he never notified the police of the complaints and allowed one of the two rabbis to leave quietly to assume a post at a Jewish school in Florida, as if he were a priest or something. He also did not notify the rabbi's new employers of the allegations against him. Quote, this was before things of this sort had attained a certain notoriety. There was a great deal of confusion, unquote. Rabbi Lamb, a spiritual leader, don't you know? This from the Herald. I wish I knew where the Herald was, but it's one of the Heralds. Dear reader, in Saturday's Herald, an advertisement for guns was placed on a page near stories and a photograph about the tragic school shooting in Connecticut. Please be assured this was neither intentional nor the fault of the advertiser. We of the Herald should have recognized the unfortunate juxtaposition. Multiple editors worked on the page and should have noticed the problem. We all made a terrible mistake, and for that, I apologize. Sincerely, Paul Osmundson, editor of some Herald somewhere. A Southern California judge is being
publicly admonished for saying a rape victim, quote, didn't put up a fight, unquote, during her assault, and that if someone doesn't want sexual intercourse, the body, quote, will not permit that to happen, unquote. No, this is not Todd Akin. This is not the election campaign. The California Commission on Judicial Performance voted 10-0 to oppose a public admonishment saying Superior Court Judge Derek Johnson's comments were inappropriate and a breach of judicial ethics. He had said during a sentencing hearing, quote, I'm not a gynecologist, but I can tell you something. If someone doesn't want to have sexual intercourse, the body shuts down. The body will not permit that to happen unless a lot of damage is inflicted, and we heard nothing about that in this case. Did he apologize? Doesn't seem so. He was admonished. He didn't really apologize. Get him out of the apologies a week. And they say they expected a hang-up and a few laughs. Instead, the Australian DJ is behind a hoax phone call to the London hospital where the pregnant Duchess of Cambridge was being treated were deeply apologetic this week as they described how their joke ended up going too far. There's not a minute that goes by that we don't think about her family and what they must be going through, said radio host Mel Gregg, her voice shaking. And the thought that we may have played a part in that is gut-wrenching, unquote. Her apology of the week, ladies and gentlemen. Apologies of the week, a copyrighted feature of this broadcast. And on a related subject, news from outside the bubble. From the Age of Melbourne, Australia. One of the suicide notes of the nurse dealt with the hoax call, according to the Age, quoting the Guardian. The radio show has been canceled, the duo suspended and moved to a safe house after death threats. Advertising has been withdrawn, the company's share price hit, and the network is under investigation. There have been a string of scandals at this radio station, Today FM, last year involving the station's top-rated breakfast presenter, Kyle Sandilands. Then the owner issued assurances that the worst was behind it. Questions are now being asked, says The Age, about a culture of a company that has built a reputation in the past few years on allowing its DJs to push the boundaries in a quest for ratings and a share of the dwindling advertising dollar. Among other so-called highlights, all of which were excised from the website when a scandal erupted, was two morning hosts, Sandilands and co-host Jackie O, used a lie detector to quiz a 14-year-old girl who revealed she'd been raped when she was 12. He also drank breast milk on air, a contest to find Sydney's smallest male member, and a contest in which Sandilands participated in a race to produce a sperm donation. That's the culture of the radio station where the prank occurred, ladies and gentlemen. If you can call it culture. Now this from the BBC. The European Court of Human Rights has awarded a German citizen compensation after finding he was an innocent victim of extraordinary rendition by the CIA. That never happens. It ordered Macedonia to pay Khaled Al-Masri 60,000 euros... That's $78,000 for arresting him and handing over to the Americans in December of 2003. He spent 5 months in secret CIA jails for suspected Islamic militants. The verdict is a major victory for Masri, who struggled to clear his name in the U.S. and Germany. Masri's account of his ordeal was established beyond reasonable doubt, said the European court. He was arrested, held in isolation, questioned, and ill-treated in a hotel in the Macedonian capital, Skopje, for 23 days. Said the court, he was then transferred to CIA agents who brought him to a secret detention facility in Afghanistan. Hello, Bagram. You're not secret anymore. Where he was further ill-treated for over 4 months. His ordeal ended when he was eventually dumped on a road in Albania after the Americans realized they had got the wrong man. During the flight to Afghanistan, he was stripped, beaten, shackled, made to wear nappies, diapers, and drugged, he says. He attempted unsuccessfully to sue 13 CIA agents in U.S. courts. An approach to the German authorities to request their extradition was later dropped. In recent years, he's been involved in several incidents in Germany. He'd been traumatized by the experience. These were violent incidents in Germany.
He's still in prison. He's due for release early in the new year. And you probably heard that the British bank HSBC was fined a record $1.2 billion by the U.S. Justice Department for aiding and abetting money laundering by, among others, drug gangs. No criminal charges brought against the bank, nor against the lead executives of the bank, including Sir John Bond, chairman of the bank during the time. After quitting the bank, he became chairman of other companies, including Vodafone, a cell phone operator in Britain. Stephen Green left HSBC at the end of 2010 to take up a seat in the House of Lords. He's also a lay preacher. Sandy Flockhart spent four decades at HSBC, retiring just before the U.S. Senate leveled its first accusations about the bank's operations in Mexico. He had been head of the Mexican business. He is now unwell. So contrast those with this. On Friday morning, inside an Alexandria, Virginia courtroom, a former high-ranking Colombian general who headed that country's anti-terrorist force was sentenced to 13 years in prison for taking bribes to help a drug trafficking organization. Mauricio Velasco, a retired general with the Colombian National Police, asked for forgiveness in Spanish and pleaded guilty to giving information to a terrorist and drug trafficking organization about criminal investigations by Colombian, British, and U.S. law enforcement officials. He took bribes from terrorists, plain and simple, said the U.S. attorney. The quid pro quo here was money for information, and for terrorists, information is power, unquote. And for drug smugglers, money is power, and the people who abetted that at HSBC, well, the worst that's happened to them is one of them is now unwell. News from outside the bubble, ladies and gentlemen, a copyrighted feature of this broadcast. Speaking of banking,
2012, the year in rebuke.
It's strange, the things some people say when they're running for president. While the American people worry about their homes and their jobs, some of my opponents have been trying to make an issue, of all things, out of the fact that I may have a Swiss bank account. As part of their attack on the capitalist system, they're trying to make it sound as if that's a bad thing. Well, here are the facts. Millions of people have Swiss bank accounts. Many of them, Swiss people themselves. If it's good enough for them, I say it's good enough for me.
Mitt Romney, he may not be normal, but he's more normal than the other guys.
I'm Mitt Romney, and I approve this message. Although I don't remember doing it.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, news of Nice Corp. Nice people doing nice things. They are nice, aren't they? James Harding, the editor of Rupert Murdoch's Times of London, announced his forced resignation this week after 5 years heading the paper, telling the newsroom, quote, "It has been made clear to me the News Corporation would like to appoint a new editor of the Times. I have agreed, therefore, to stand down." Sources claim, according to The Telegraph, that Rupert Murdoch was displeased by the way the Times newspaper covered the arrests of former News International executives, particularly in recent weeks. Rup, is there any truth to that? Rup, any truth to that?
I'd hate to call you a liar, but I don't believe you.
All right, well, it's the don't blame me, blame The Telegraph. That's all I'm saying. The payout, meanwhile, gifted to former News International CEO Rebecca Brooks, who used to edit the one of the corporation's infamous tabloids. She resigned in the hacking mess and was later charged with bribery and perverting justice. What's she getting from News Corp? Her payout has been revised upward for the third time, according to Bloomberg. Bloomberg News, not the mayor. She is now getting, it went up from about $2.5 million to now $17
$1.6 million. That is so nice. It's nice people doing nice things. The true sum, apparently, though, is significantly higher, will continue to grow. Sources reveal that Brooks, a close ally of Murdoch and friend of David Cameron, the Prime Minister of Britain, received about $13 million, maybe $14, as compensation for loss of office. You're fired. Here's money to compensate you for being fired. The sum, which dwarfs the $3.5 million paid by News International to the family of the murdered schoolgirl Millie Dowler for hacking her phone, includes, quote, various ongoing benefits, including funding a London office and staff for 2 years and paying Brooks's legal bills as she fights the charges against her. You know, you may think that's weird. I think it's nice. And News International may have stopped cooperating with a police investigation into alleged criminal behavior by journalists because it found evidence that could implicate Rupert Murdoch, says an MP, a member of Parliament. Chris Bryant suggested the company's management and standards committee had been happy to help the police by chucking overboard journalists as long as they could ensure the proprietor's feet didn't get wet. He used parliamentary privilege to claim that the corporation destroyed a laptop computer to get rid of evidence of criminality over the Sun newspaper's payment to a U.S. soldier for pictures of Saddam Hussein in jail. Well, a soldier got those pictures. He got some money. That's nice. News of Nice Corp, nice people doing nice things. This from oilprice.com. British Petroleum, yes, we can call it that, BP, if you like, has always claimed it shared all information with the public and with the federal government about the extent of the Deepwater Horizon oil spill and the rate of flow of the leaking oil. BP stated it never knew of the true quantity of oil escaping the well until a few months after the blowout. Emails soon to be released seem to suggest otherwise. Former BP engineer Kurt Mix being charged by federal prosecutors with obstructing the law. They believe he deleted thousands of emails and text messages tied to the company's efforts to measure the size of the underwater leak. The emails Mix's lawyer will release in February will supposedly prove his innocence by showing he deleted nothing, at the same time show that BP in fact knew about the size of the flow rate long before they advised the U.S. authorities. The emails show just 2 days after the explosion occurred, Mick sent in an estimate of the flow rate to his supervisor between 62,000 and 145,000 barrels a day. At that time, BP executives told the Coast Guard their best estimates were that the leak was merely 1,000 barrels a day. Just trying to help. Good folks at BP, you see. Ladies and gentlemen, this, ladies and gentlemen, was the year that President Obama told an interviewer during the campaign that his mistake during his first 2 years in office was that he thought he was just supposed to get the policy stuff right. And he had realized now, deep into the end of his fourth year, that the president also had the job, the important job of telling a story to the American people. Telling a story that would give them hope.
2012, the year in rebuke.
From CPR, Continental Public Radio, the President's Weekly Address. And now, from his weekly address, the President.
You've earned it. You need it. It's story time. Today, the story of the three wise men and the magic land. Once upon a time, in a place and time very much like our own, except without Fox News, there was a wise leader who had inherited a lot of bad things. Oh, he inherited some good things, too. Like the power to detain citizens indefinitely. But that's another story. Literally. But it was a time when everyone was afraid that there wouldn't be any more money. So that wise leader sought out the smartest men about money. They were named Larry, and Timmy, and Bernanke. As it happened, all of them had had something to do with there possibly not being any more money. So the wise leader knew that if anyone was going to figure out how to fix that problem, it was them. They saw that the banks were weak, and without the banks, there couldn't be any money. They knew that if they helped the people, but not the banks, the people couldn't help the banks recover. But if they helped the banks and not the people, then the banks could help the people recover. It was a fine plan by three very wise men, and it may yet work out. Meanwhile, on the other side of the world, there was a magical place. It was magical because many other countries had gone there and been forced to leave. But the wise leader knew that it was important to stay there to defeat the worldwide evil that was now headquartered in two much less magical places. And so he called in the special airplanes, the drones, and the reapers. And oh, they droned. And also did they reap. And even the bad people next door in the country which was our good friend, but not really, some of them got reaped too. And in the magical place, more girls went to school, and more poppies bloomed, and many of the leaders acquired fine new properties in Dubai, which was out of range of their enemies. But soon, with the residents of the magical place and the people of his own land joining in to ask for an end to the fighting in that land far away, the wise leader, after much thinking and consulting with defense intellectuals, came to a realization. He finally understood why this place was so magical. He realized it was a land from which you could withdraw all of your soldiers, and yet from which you could never, ever leave. And nothing is more magical than that. Well, enough stories for today. Next week I'll have a story about helping people keep their homes by not preventing fraudulent foreclosures. That's kind of magical, too. So I'll talk to you then. And in the meantime, through my aggressive circuits, have a great weekend.
Funds for this broadcast came from the Public Radio What Did We Do With the Other Funds Fund. This is CPR, Continental Public Radio.
Now, ladies and gentlemen, news of the warm, won't you?
Soft, listen to the war. We can listen to the war.
Using a new method for estimating greenhouse gases that combines atmospheric measurements with model predictions, well, I predict Christopher Brinkley won't be on... Oh, no, they don't mean that. Lawrence Berkeley National Laboratory researchers have found that the level of nitrous oxide, a potent greenhouse gas in California, may be 2.5 to 3 times greater than the current inventory. At that level, total NTO nitrous oxide emissions, which are believed to come primarily from nitrogen fertilizers used in agricultural production, would account for about 8% of California's total greenhouse gas emissions. These findings were published in a paper in Geophysical Research Letters. Earlier this year, using the same methodology, researchers found that levels of methane, or methane as it's called in this country, another potent greenhouse gas in California, may be up to almost 2 times greater than previous estimates. If our results are accurate, then it suggests that nitrous oxide makes up not 3% of California's total greenhouse gases, but closer to 10%, says Mark Fisher, lead researcher on both studies. Taken together with our previous estimates of methane, that suggests these two gases may make up a quarter of California's total emissions. That's starting to become roughly comparable to emissions from fossil fuel carbon dioxide. Accurate estimates of the emissions are important as the state works to reduce emissions to 1990 levels by 2020, as mandated by law. Nitrous oxide is better known as laughing gas. The Arctic region continued to break records in 2012, among them the loss of summer sea ice, spring snow cover, and melting of the Greenland ice sheet. This was true even though air temperatures in the Arctic were unremarkable relative to the last decade, according to a new report released December 6th. The Arctic is changing in both predictable and unpredictable ways, so we must expect surprises, says Jane Lubchenco, Undersecretary of Commerce for Oceans and Atmosphere. The Arctic is an extremely sensitive part of the world. If we find it an extremely sensible part of the world, please send me there. News of the Warm, ladies and gentlemen, a copyrighted feature of this broadcast. And here's big news in my little world. CDs, DVDs, books, the whole schmear at the store at harryshearer.com. Starting tomorrow, just $5 with free shipping. And I'm not telling you to go there. Don't go there. I'm not telling you that either. But I am telling you that that concludes this week's edition of the show. The program returns next week at the same time over these same stations over NPR worldwide throughout Europe, the USN 440 cable system in Japan, around the world through the facilities of the American Forces Network, up and down the east coast of North America via the shortwave giant WBCQ, the planet, 7.490 megahertz shortwave on the mighty 104 in Berlin. Around the world via the internet at two different locations, live and archived. Whenever you want it, harryshearer.com and kcrw.com, available as a thing for your smartphone through stitcher.com and available as a free podcast thing at kcrw.com. And it'd be just like always playing the clean version if you'd agree to join with me then, would you already? Thank you very much. Uh-huh. Show chapeau to the San Diego, Pittsburgh, Chicago in Exile, and Hawaii desks. Thanks, as always, to Pam Halstead. The email address for this broadcast and the playlist for the music heard here on, as well as the aforementioned store, all just a click away at harryshearer.com. This broadcast has a presence on Twitter, don't you know? Join the more than, who's counting, followers at The Harry Shearer. Somebody's counting. Twitter's counting, of course. Facebook's counting. That's who's counting, Twitter. The show comes to you from Century of Progress Productions and originates through the facilities of KCRW Santa Monica, a community recognized around the world as the home of the Rubber Promise. And now, more than ever, the home of the homeless.